Hello and welcome to the Recon Ride. I'm Dane Cash.
And I'm Cosmo Catalano.
And we're here to bring you a pre-race show for the Giro d'Italia, part one. We're going to be doing things a bit differently for the Grand Tours because they're Grand Tours. So today we're going to do most of the overall pre-race analysis that you've come to expect. And then we're going to dig into the first nine stages of the race, the first stretch of racing before we get to rest day number one. And we're going to outline what those days are going to be like. And we're also going to make a few prognostications on what we think is going to happen.
Yeah, we've got a pretty exciting show on tap with a ton of rider interviews. Really looking forward to integrating their comments into, you know, sort of our predictions for this year's Giro.
Yeah, the Giro's a pretty big deal. So we wanted to get in as much inside the peloton insight as possible. One of the things that makes the Giro such a big deal is the history behind it. It's been around for a very long time. This will be the 98th edition of the race, which first ran all the way back in 1909. So it's one of the sport's very oldest stage races. If you know much about bike racing history, or if you've listened to a few of our shows where we've talked about the early history of some of the major races, you will not be surprised to learn that this race, like so many others, was started by a newspaper, La Gazzetta. In the first few editions, and this is something that I think is pretty fascinating, the general classification was determined not by cumulative overall times, but by a points system that ultimately it worked in a somewhat similar fashion to the points classifications in today's stage races. That didn't last long, but that's how it all started. Originally, it was only an 8-stage race, but as the popularity of the Giro d'Italia grew and grew, the race itself got longer and longer. So today, it's 21 stages long.
And unlike a lot of the other Grand Tours, it's had an interesting history in recent years. It sort of reflecting the increased focus on mondialization, as the UCI likes to say. Historically, it was a very Italian race, and kind of in the 80s and 90s, you began to see more foreign racers coming in and competing and even winning it. And then sort of during the Armstrong years, really, there was just a disappearance of major contenders from outside of Italy. You have a huge run of Italian winners through a time when a lot of the rest of the sport was sort of, again, mostly because of Armstrong, I guess, getting a little more international profile up until, you know, Alberto Contador came along and won it in 2008. So definitely a race that's sort of, I think in recent years, really changed from this Italian festival to more of, it's really taken its place as, not that it ever didn't have a place, as one of the great races in cycling. Like obviously the Tour, the Giro and the Vuelta are the three Grand Tours, but this has always sort of been looked at maybe almost as a little backwater. And now it's really started to kind of become more of the main, it's become more of the spotlight event that I think it obviously should be. And I think the best indication of that is the fact that Contador is here again, despite also targeting the Tour.
Yeah, Contador and a few other really, really big names riding in the race this year, which should make a pretty exciting event and an international event more than just, like you said, an Italian festival. So that's going to be really fun to watch, I think. So let's get a little deeper into the route itself. We'll give a bit of an overview, and then we'll go stage by stage through the first several stages in this show, and then we'll dig into the next few in the next show. So we'll try to get a sense of what these riders are about to take on in the 2015 Giro d'Italia. The Giro d'Italia this year starts with an opening team time trial. And after that TTT, things get bumpy pretty quickly, as opposed to maybe the several straight flat stages you might come to expect in other Grand Tours. So there's a tough mountain finish on stage 5, for instance. And so things will have already started to take shape by the time we get to the first rest day. And I'm pretty happy about that because it should lead to some exciting early racing. There's probably going to be a bit of a GC lull in the middle of the race, But then things heat up suddenly with an absurdly long individual time trial.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a hair under 60 kilometers, which is, even for the Tour, that would be long. And the Tour, because it's the Tour, likes to think that it has to be bigger than everyone else. Thus the, you know, in the Giro, the climbs only go to Category 1, but in the Tour, they go to Category HC. But anyway, this, you know, it's a very long time trial. It's, there are some rolling sections, but not hilly at all. And it's, you know, it, the potential to open huge gaps, which climbers will then have to make up coming into the exceptionally hilly closing week of the race.
Yeah, stage 15 and 16, very difficult, multiple mountains. Stage 19 finishes with a wicked three-climb trio.
Stage 20 has the Colle del Finestra, which is also the Copa, the Cima Copi for the highest point in this year's Giro. And interestingly, it's, you know, despite being an 18K climb that's, you know, averaging 9%, it's not the final stage, it's not the final climb of the day. So there's a short descent and then like a Cat 3 climb up to Sestriere afterwards. It's a not really a typical way to end the race, but one that kind of opens things up maybe for non-climbers to hang on.
Right. And then things will close out with a flat stage into Milan. So overall, I think it's a pretty balanced route, a route that I personally like a lot. That time trial of nearly 60 kilometers, very intriguing to me. Lots of flat, and that will really demand that the contenders have a balanced skill set. And then the final stages, there are several days of multiple difficult climbs, back to back to back, where we will hopefully see action in the middle of the day, rather than seeing guys waiting until the final 5 minutes. So I think as Giros go, this one should be a pretty exciting one. And it has the parkour to set up a close GC battle.
Yeah, I look at this and I sort of see the previous 2 years Giros have had really just showboaty courses, you know, huge climbs back to back. They'd have uphill time trials right after that. And they kind of got bit by it a couple of times. There was a stage canceled in 2013. Last year, there was trouble with the weather and some polemica, because this is the Giro, some polemica surrounding that. And so I think this is really, they've kind of gone in the other direction. They've really tried to set up a course that, while not absurd on paper, really promotes the racers making the race rather than the course making the race. So I'm definitely looking forward to it, too.
So those racers in particular, many of them really stand out as potential contenders. Let's dig a little deeper into the start list. The start list in this year's Giro d'Italia, as we alluded to earlier, has an international flair to it, some really big names coming to contest the race. There is some semblance of a quote-unquote big three of riders here, top contenders, in Alberto Contador, Richie Porte, and Rigoberto Urán. So let's start with Alberto Contador. He comes in as the bookies' favorite. He's won the race in the past. The Alberto Contador of 2014 was almost unstoppable. The only thing that really got in his way all year last year was unfortunately a crash in the Tour de France.
His biggest opponent was himself.
Exactly. He's got the amazing climbing skills, but he's also flashed serious time trialing chops, both generally in his career and then especially in these last several months. And that will come in handy on the long flat stretches of that 14th stage. So I don't think it's surprising that Contador is the top favorite here for most people, but he's also looking to score the elusive Giro Tour double this season. And in pursuit of that very lofty goal, I'm not sure that he's going to be at absolute top form for the race. It's not easy to hold that kind of form all the way through July. And what's more, he hasn't really dominated the early season like he did last year, which could open the door for other riders. And there are a few, in particular, one of whom has kind of, well, who has dominated the early season.
Yeah, Richie Porte, man. The guy is just, when he's on, he is, I almost want to see him and Froome get in some sort of inter-team argument when he is having good Richie Porte and see if he's faster, because he has just been ripping everything up this year. didn't win the Tour Down Under, but, you know, not again, not a, a huge surprise. Was only fourth at Volta Algarve, but again, like, you got to imagine the guy is not keyed in on it on a race like that the same way he is at, say, Paris-Nice, where he just looked like he was on another level. The only question mark I have with him is Grand Tour length. Like, he's looked great in 1 week stage races, but we haven't really seen him turn on that same level for an entire Grand Tour. I know he's a guy who can make it to the finish line. He's won the Young Rider classification in the 2010 Giro, which was actually the first time I ever heard of him, when he had, like, literally just switched over from being a triathlete and ended up with the leader's jersey for a couple of days because in some insane day in the rain, you know, a 60 or 70 rider break got away and won the day. So I can't. We'll get to predictions later, but he certainly looks hot coming in. The question is just, you know, what is he going to do on a stage like this where he has sole leadership?
Yeah, there's kind of the Alberto Contador who has the palmares, the results in his career, but hasn't quite been as hot. And then there's Richie Porte who doesn't have the results in his career, but he's just blazing hot right now. And I think that's really the big conversation right now, is whether that experience versus last couple weeks of just blazing dominance is going to come out on top. And then there's Rigoberto Urán, who I think certainly belongs in the discussion, having been runner-up twice in a row now, though I think it's fair to say that he's the clear third favorite behind those two. Still, one thing that I'm liking about Urán's run-up to this race is that he's scored some decent results so far this year. Colombian Time Trial Championship, top 10s in Strada Bianca, Catalunya, Romandy, and a podium performance in Tirreno. In the past 2 years, he was basically anonymous in the lead-in to the Giro before really turning it on the big stage. This year, he's been very strong already, which makes me wonder if maybe he's hit a new level this year.
Urán is so interesting because, like, on paper, he's obviously, you know, two consecutive runner-ups at the Giro. Has climbing ability, has time trialing ability, but you at the same time, I can't ever think of a day when, you know, Rigoberto Urán was the major protagonist, where he was breaking away and people were chasing him down. He's a guy who really, he really seems to, I guess the term is thrive. Certainly, you know, you're thriving if you're second in the Giro. He certainly seems to ride well from behind, to the point that, you know, he's almost out of the GC picture by the time he comes into his best form. And I'm thinking that that actually might help him here, to have that sort of almost go unmarked early in the race and then turn it on in the last week.
Like Contador, like Porte, he combines the climbing strength with the time trialing ability. They're all very well-balanced riders. So form and tactics and team support are probably going to play a very big role in deciding who among them is the top contender. In terms of team support, Sky and Tinkoff Saxo in particular, both with strong GC-oriented squads. Sky has Leopold Koenig, who's less than a year removed from his seventh overall at the Tour de France. They've got a young but very impressive Sebastian Henao. And then Tinkoff Saxo with Roman Kreuziger, Michael Rogers, Ivan Basso. All of these guys are strong Grand Tour talents who will be able to provide support for their team leaders or play the role of alternative if something happens to the designated squad leader on those teams. And then there's maybe a couple of other riders who are going to be coming in here hoping to take this race by surprise.
I don't know if surprise is quite the word for Fabio Aru, because he's just been the next, you know, the next great Italian hope for since, you know, I've heard his name. But you got to wonder this year, not a strong pre-Giro performance coming in. Obviously, Greg Henderson tweeted about one of his withdrawals saying it was super suspicious and it was doping, but then later retracted it. He's so fluid and strong when he is climbing and he's super fit and skinny, but it's also a skinniness that I can't imagine it being long-term sustainable. And I'm kind of, you know, I can see him getting away for some stages. I can see him really tearing things up in the third week of this race. But that 60K time trial, you know, I haven't seen anything that makes me think he's got an answer for that.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be particularly friendly to his style of riding. I think you could say the same thing about Domenico Pozzovivo, who has been up here in the conversation for a long time in the Giro. He's done some surprising time trial performances for his size and his skill set, but I don't think it really is going to suit him all that well. But he does have a nice team. He's got the experience of riding in this race and riding in a number of Grand Tours in his career. Definitely a fair outsider to mention.
In terms of perpetual outsiders, Lampre's Przemyslaw Niemiec seems like someone to bring up. Really an interesting character, one of the Eastern Europeans who kind of found their way into the sport through kind of lower tier Italian racing and has really just been consistent. He's a guy who, you know, he won a stage at the Vuelta, but he's never been tabbed as a GC contender, yet you look through his palmares and you see, you know, he can keep up. He can stay, you know, near the front of a 3-week race. He was sixth in 2013. So, you know, a lot of things can happen in a stage race. Like the first time I saw Port, a 70 rider break won a stage. Like, that's unusual. Maybe not a guy who's going to take the overall. Also have to mention his teammate Diego Ulissi, who is just off a doping suspension for overusing an inhaler. You can read that however you want, but for me, he is a guy who is almost constitutionally incapable of not winning a stage. Very, very tricky, explosive rider. Loves to take chances and loves to find opportunities. Jürgen Vandenbroek, another guy to mention, kind of perpetually in the mix. I feel a little bad for him because he has this expectation of a cycling mad country on his shoulders and really not a guy. He's similar to Iran in the fact that he's never been the guy who animates or who breaks away or who drives the action on a stage, but who can consistently hit top five in Grand Tours. So, again, anything could happen. One to watch.
I think it's a little sad for him that I'm only mentioning him this late into our conversation, but that's just kind of the way it's been. Ryder Heidedal, he won this race not that long ago, back in 2012. But there's really been nothing recently to suggest that he's going to be able to fight it out for another victory. He was in the top 10 last year, at the very fringes of the top 10, in that he was ninth. This year, I think he'll come in as the leader for Canadel-Garmin, but he has yet to land a GC top 10 result on the season. So certainly a rider who you would expect to maybe be at the fringes of the battle, but I don't know that he's going to really put in a kind of performance anywhere near what he did back in 2012.
I think Heisdahl is interesting because he's the corn snake, you know, he's that the snake with the pattern that looks like the venomous snake. So every time people see him, they're like, oh shit, we got to mark that. We got to follow that. And he's been used very effectively by Canadel-Garmin in that position. I always love to watch what he's doing, not because of what he could personally perform with, but because what is the rest of the team planning based off this first attack that he starts.
Yeah, and maybe that'll work out well for Tom Danielson, who has had some nice results recently, or Davide Formolo, Janer Acevedo. These are guys with a lot of talent, so if Ryder Heidedal has all the eyes on him, maybe one of these Canadel-Garmin riders with great climbing ability can get away and make something happen when all the eyes are on the former winner, Ryder Heidedal. Speaking of surprises, I can't not mention Ilner Zakarin after his Tour de Romandie victory. We made that mistake last time, and he showed up and he took a second on the fifth stage, got into the yellow jersey, but there was a time trial after it, and I don't think many people expected him to hold the yellow jersey through the time trial. Certainly the bookies didn't. And not only did he hold the yellow jersey through the time trial, he was only a few seconds behind Tony Martin. He was probably a bike change away from beating Tony Martin. So, yeah, it's hard to really know what to expect from Zakarin. He was also pretty good in Pais Vasco. Obviously, there's a lot of talent there. I don't really know what to expect from him, but his team, I think, is going to set him up pretty well in that early team time trial. For once, Katusha seems to have figured out how to do the TTTs. They've got some good chrono talents that they brought to Romandie, and they're bringing them here to the Giro as well. So I think, who knows with Zakarin, certainly he showed off that he's a guy to watch out for. Movistar won the race last year with Nairo Quintana, but he is not here this year, and neither is Alejandro Valverde. So they're going to be looking to some of their second rank guys. Benyet and Shousty, a nice top 10 bet. He tends to perform pretty well in the big races. Jan Izagirre as well. Both riders are pretty balanced and could put in a nice ride here.
I'm really looking to see what Movistar does without, you know, the head honcho, the main GC threat. These are the guys who are ripping the field down to 12 people at the foot of the climbs. To see them off the leash, I think, is going to be really cool. You know, maybe shades of the old Euskaltel from back in the day, people just taking chances and blowing the race apart.
Yep, and they certainly have firepower, just not just with those top two guys, but behind them as well. So then you've also got Franco Pellizzati, you've got Steven Kruijswijk for Lotto NL, and plenty of other kind of fringe outside contenders who are going to try to mix it in with the big favorites. I think that sums up the GC conversation, at least at a relatively high level. There's also plenty of top name stage hunter types here. Some good sprinters.
Yeah. I mean, Andre Greipel, he's won stages in, I think, every Grand Tour. But also, he's interesting in that he is not the sort of dominant rider who will win day after day after day after day. He really seems to pick his moments, maybe likes the shorter stages a little bit more, a little punchier finishes. But, you know, also kind of a versatile rider. Like, he is totally willing to support teammates when it has to happen. So another thing that might take away from his ability to just run that Chipo train through the sprint stages. But I think the strongest guy here when it comes to the final kick.
Yeah, and you would think that he's definitely going to take a stage, maybe two or three even, and he's shown a bit of pretty impressive versatility lately. But as you point out, he's not the most consistent rider, and that's going to open the door for plenty of other sprinters. As is often the case in the Giro d'Italia, many of the top sprinters here are going to be Italy's fastest guys. To me, you have to talk about Giacomo Nizzolo when you talk about sprinters at the Giro d'Italia. He was second on four stages last year. He's got really impressive top speed, but has, in many occasions, he's maybe gone a bit too early or a bit too late for a sprint, and that's come back to hurt him. He's here this year. He's 26, so he's right in that prime of his, you would think, his athletic sprinting career. I can't think it's going to take that much longer for him to finally get that big Giro d'Italia win. So with that in mind, I gave Giacomo a call to talk about the upcoming race. Giacomo, first off, welcome to the Recon Ride. We're coming up on what I would imagine is one of the biggest goals of your season. Can you tell us how the Giro d'Italia compares to the rest of the objectives on your calendar?
Yeah, of course, Giro is something different for me because it's my home country, Italy, so the feeling is totally different. It's the biggest race in Italy, so for me, it's, I can say, maybe the best goal of the season, and I really would like to be strong there.
Can you describe the atmosphere at the Giro for an Italian rider like yourself?
Yeah, you know, it's really special because first of all, you speak Italian with most of the guys, which is not happened really often in the peloton right now, and also the people around, the fans, the supporters, are really, you know, it's your country, so it's your culture, and you know most of the people, so it's different, and for sure it's a nice feeling.
After so many close calls last year and so many almost victories, have you done anything different to prepare for the Giro this year that you think will help push you over the top?
Yeah, of course. In the last training camp, we worked more about the sprints, and that's our goal. Our target is to win one stage, and to take that, we work on it. We try to improve the train. I mean the lead out, and also my quality as a sprinter, working in the gym and sprints in general. So I hope we'll be better than the second place this year.
What do you make of the rest of the field here? Do you feel like it's going to be a difficult group of sprinters to beat in the fast finishes?
Yeah, of course, there would be a lot of sprinters there. Some of them were not in the Giro last year, so looks like it's gonna be hard for sure to beat them. But I will try my best.
Is Trek Factor Racing here exclusively to hunt for stage wins? Is that the real central goal here?
Yeah, this year we go to the Giro with these goals and to get one stage and maybe the point jersey, the red jersey. And yeah, we don't have GC riders, so we will try to go for the stages as many times as we can.
Well, since you don't have a GC type guy here, I think that qualifies you as an impartial observer, Giacomo. Can you give us who you think will be the top GC favorites for the race?
Yeah, we saw in this part of the season Richie Porte really strong, and of course Contador is still the big favorite. But I think also Uran with this long time trial will be a guy who can really be at the top. And of course also Fabio Aru, he proved last year that he's really one of the best talent in Italy, and I think for him is one of the best goal, and he will be there also to fight for sure for the podium and maybe for something more.
You're going to make us look good, because that's exactly who we're talking about as the top favorites for this race. So thanks for that, Giacomo. What do you make of the route? Do you feel like it's more sprinter-friendly, about the same, less sprinter-friendly than years past?
You know, it's a bit different. I mean, there are several chances, I guess 6 or 7 stages for the sprinters, but are not close. I mean, it's not like maybe the other years where most of the stages for the sprinter were in the first week. Here we have 7 stages, but the last one is in Milan, and some of them are in the second week, because already the first week is going to be tough. And so there are chances, but we have to arrive to these stages to get the sprint.
Do you like the way the sprint stages are kind of scattered throughout the race rather than all clustered in the first week? Or is that something that you maybe feel suits you less?
Well, I think for me, it's maybe better to have sprinter stages later on, because I think I can maybe resist a bit better compared to some other sprinters on the climb. So I hope that's going to help me to get one victory maybe in the second or the third week of the tour.
Right. Are there any particular days or stages where maybe the parkour you feel is especially good for you, or maybe you have a local connection, so you're hoping to take a win on that particular day?
Yeah, of course, the last one in Milan, it's a dream. It's a dream because I was born in Milan, so it's my home city, and that would be nice. Anyway, it would be a beautiful stage because it's the last one, and then I will enjoy it, this stage anyway. But of course, to win there, it's a dream. And then we have also other stages. I think Fuji, which is the longest one, it's really hard because it's long and the final is not flat, it's up and down, and it's kind of a classic these days. It's long, and as I tell you, it's not easy in the end, and in this stage maybe some sprinters would be tired, and I would try to do something special on this day.
Well, I know we'll be tipping you on a few stages, so definitely good luck out there. And hopefully the 3 weeks of brutal Grand Tour racing are as pleasant as they can be.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Giacomo.
Bye-bye.
That was Giacomo Nozzolo. Trek Factory Racing will be hoping to launch him to a stage win or two at this race. Matteo Pellucchi of Yam Cycling, another big Italian sprinter here, same age as Giacomo, but he's actually never ridden in the Giro. Yam Cycling got their World Tour invite this year, and that means that Matteo Pellucchi gets to take part in the Giro for the first time, and he's had a nice last year and a half or so, had a good start to this season, so I reached out to Matteo and got his feel for the Giro ahead of his debut participation in Italy's biggest bike race. Matteo, thanks for joining the Recon Ride. You're coming up on your first Giro d'Italia start. What does that mean for you as an Italian rider to be racing here in this race?
Yes, for me, it's our first Giro. For me, it's most important to be in the Giro. Because I'm Italian, because I like this race, and I will try to do my best.
How are you feeling about your form ahead of this race, which is going to be, you know, I think on another level compared to maybe the one-weekers and some of the other races during the season?
I think my level now is good. I spent a long time without race, and I did last week Tour of Yorkshire with the second place, and I'm training well, training good, and I hope my shape is good for Giro.
Did you change your approach in getting ready for a race this big, this long, or did you have relatively the same preparation to what you're used to?
No, I just did a long training camp in the altitude in Sierra Nevada with the team, and then I just did a race in Yorkshire, but normally it's always the same work, not so different.
Are you happy with the way the start of your season has gone so far?
For the moment, yes, I'm happy. I started very well with the two victories and some place, third place in Oman and now second place in Yorkshire. But for the moment, I'm happy. I have a crash in Tirreno. It was a little bit problem for me, but now I'm good.
Are you coming into this race with any expectations or objectives that you've set for yourself?
It's my first Giro. I can't expect nothing. But the goal is to win our stage, but it's not easy. We will try.
You've got a number of good stage hunter types on the team, in addition to yourself, some fast finishers like Heinrich Hausler or Sylvain Chavanel. How do you guys expect to kind of work together in that pursuit of a stage win?
Yeah, we have a team for try to win a stage. For me, in particular, for the first stage, I have Salamontis and Roger Kruger. He can help me for the sprint. And maybe also Hausler when we split the sprint. And I have a team for that.
Thanks for carving out a little time from your pre-Giro prep. We really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Good luck, and we'll see you out there. Ciao.
Ciao, ciao.
That was Matteo Pellucchi, another big Italian sprinter. I would imagine he'll be up there fighting for some sprint victories with Nozzolo, with Greipel, and with some of the other Italian guys who are going to be among the quickest men in the race.
Yep. Got to look at Elia Viviani from Sky, a guy who started off his season with a pretty strong win at Dubai Tour, so not a huge marquee event, but certainly the biggest road race kind of going on in the world at that point in time. Not, again, a guy kind of like Greipel who isn't going to, you know, win day after day after day, but who does slip away with pretty important wins now and then. I think the question for him is going to be team support because, you know, Port's there. They're really going to be focused on GC. I don't think any team out there really knows how to circle the wagons around one guy the way Sky does. But, you know, if there's a dead point in the GC race, one of the flatter stages kind of in the middle of the tour, I think that's a great time to look for him.
Yet another Italian sprinting talent, Sacha Modolo, is here. He can be a bit inconsistent, but he's very quick when he's on a good day. Roberto Ferrari, his teammate, the same kind of applies for him. Luca Mezgets won the final stage of last year's Giro d'Italia. He's here with Giant Alpecin's always dangerous sprint train. hasn't had quite the results so far this year that he had last year when he took three stages in Catalunya in the run-up to the Giro d'Italia, but he's very quick, and I think he often gets overlooked because of the abilities of Kittel and Degenkolb on the same team. Michael Matthews and Juan José Lobato, I think, deserve their own category. They can win sprints, but they're really the kinds of guys who like to win the bumpier days, the ones that end with short climbs near the finish lines. They're both here. I'm really glad that they're both here because I think they both have very similar skill sets, and I want to see them go up against each other, and I think they will on a number of stages. So get ready to watch Lobato versus Matthews on some of the more intermediate stages. If the Peloton can catch the breakaways on those kinds of days, you have to think these guys are going to be set up for sprint victories. Speaking of breakaways, there's a couple of guys here that I think are going to be right in that conversation, trying to nab a win, take one from the sprinters on some of the intermediate days, or take one from the GC guys on the mountainous days. Adam Hansen. Cosmo, you even made a video about the guy.
Well, I made a video about the season, which I declared him the winner of for a variety of reasons. You should watch the video, but I find him to be a really almost intellectual rider who really kind of plots out. You know, he has a good sense of what's going on in the stage race as a whole and can kind of pick those days when the pack is going to let the break go. And he's a beefy guy, especially for someone who likes to break away and ride over climbs. But he measures his efforts so well. He uses tiny, tiny gears. Like, it's almost like, you know, the gorilla on a bicycle kind of thing at the circus. But he makes it work, and he's got a pretty good palmarès to show for it.
And because of that, and because he's one of the most experienced Grand Tour riders around, we reached out to Adam Hansen. I talked to Adam and got his take on the Giro, which he'll be riding for the bazillionth time. He's done, I don't know, something like 55 Grand Tours in a row, approximately. And I asked him about his strategy and where he's going to fit in for the team. So here's Adam Hansen of Lotto Soudal talking Giro. Adam Hansen, thanks for joining us. You're coming to us just after finishing the Tour of Turkey. How was that?
Yeah, it was a good race. Everyone loves Tour of Turkey. You know, it's a great country to be in, and it's great weather, and it's a very good build-up for the Giro d'Italia for myself. And I always love being there.
You're coming up on, I think it's Grand Tour number 11 here at the Giro, and if all goes according to plan this year, you're going to surpass the record of Bernardo Ruiz, which is 12. You know, for most people, one or two Grand Tours is plenty in a year, but you seem to really like doing all three. Would you characterize them as fun?
Well, yeah, I do, in a sense. You know, I love the Grand Tours. I think it's a great way of racing. Every day you got a chance, and if something, you know, you missed a break or the team doesn't have a good day, you can always try the next. There's heaps of opportunity. The Grand Tours is, for me, you just pack your suitcase, you go away, and you just deal with 100% racing. You got nothing else to worry about. And it's nice just to step away from the real world and live in a cycling bubble for a while and just race and nothing but that.
What would you say makes the Giro d'Italia unique among the three Grand Tours?
The Giro is definitely one of my favorites because it's a real passionate Grand Tour where you have real cycling fans there, and just the atmosphere at the Giro just feels more real as compared to the Tour. I always say at the Tour de France you have a lot of tourist fans, guys that go there that just want to be part of the Tour and the atmosphere, you know, like the party side. Where the Giro is more, I believe they're real true fans, and it's just so nice to stay in Italian hotels and, you know, in the country and eating Italian food, and it's just a really nice race.
Well, speaking of that atmosphere, do you foresee taking any more beer feeds this year?
You know, if one gets presented in front of me, I can't turn it down, that's for sure.
In the last 2 years in particular, you've really kind of found an extra gear in the Grand Tours, picking up some stage wins in breakaways. How do you go about picking days where you're going to go on the move?
Well, that's it's very difficult. Well, obviously, the racing is such at a high level. You got 180 guys that also want to win stages. But I try and suit the days where you try and focus the energy in the days where you really have a chance. You know, if it's way too difficult or it's a massive uphill mountain to finish, then sometimes you're just wasting your time. So you really got to pick the days that are really suited to yourself. And I'm just, I think the more I do the Grand Tours, it's more like, you know, I kind of want a bit more from it. And I try and focus a lot more on picking those days correctly and having a real shot.
Have you looked at the roadbook enough yet to get a sense of maybe the days that you're going to be targeting? And if so, would you be willing to divulge that information with us?
Oh, well, I have a very brief look on the some of the profiles, and there are a couple of stages that look good. We are going there with a very strong team this year. So we've got Andre Greipel there and also Eugen Vandenbroek. So it's going to be very difficult to have my own chances, as Andre is one of the best sprinters in the world. So we definitely hope to pick up a few wins with him. And after working for him and Eugen Vandenbroek, I'll find out from the sports director which days I can have free. And then I'll have to focus on those days.
You've been doing the three grand tours a year thing for what now seems like quite some time. Do you have an end date in the future where maybe you're going to just enjoy the weather in May and July instead of racing for 3 long weeks up in the mountains?
Well, at the moment, I really enjoy the race program I have where I do all the three grand tours in a year. The only downside of it is that there are other beautiful races in the race calendar that I do miss out on doing three grand tours. I would like to do these races in the future. Not the short-term future, because I just want to try and continue the streak as long as I can. But I like to, maybe skip a grand tour in the long-term future and do some of the other races on the race calendar.
Well, until then, we are certainly going to enjoy watching you out there trying to make something happen. We'll have an eye on you on those breakaway friendly days, so good luck.
Well, thank you very much.
Have a good Giro, and we'll see you.
Bye.
That was Adam Hansen. Again, the kind of guy that you're going to have to watch out for in the breakaways on some of the bumpier days where maybe the sprinters let it get away from them.
Another rider, or really another team to mention, is Bardiani CSF. As far as local Italian teams go, they are the big leagues of the little league. You know, their team is stacked with guys who could break away and take a stage. You've got Stefano Perazzi, you've got Enrico Battaglin, who is a great sprinter and has a nice nose for kind of when to put in an effort. He won a really long sprint at the end of a tough day here 2 years ago. You've got Sonny Colbrelli, another quick guy. You've got to imagine, like, the Giro is basically their entire season. The team they're sending is all Italian. They're going to win a stage. That's what's going to happen. It is.
I'm with you. I think it's pretty much guaranteed they're going to take a stage. Those kinds of maybe intermediate days, you're probably also going to look out for Philippe Gilbert. You're going to look out for Simon Gerrans. You're going to look out for Sylvain Chavanel and Heinrich Hausler. It's going to be a battle to pick up those breakaway wins or those reduced sprint finishes. And there are going to be a few because there's some bumpy days in the race. So that'll wrap up our overall start list conversation. Now we can get into the first 9 stages of the race. Again, that's the first stretch of racing before rest day number 1, on which we'll have another show to talk about the next stretch of days. So we'll just do a brief overview of what to expect, what's coming up around the corner in the Giro d'Italia, and we'll also give you our stage favorites for those days. Obviously important to note, it's pretty difficult trying to predict the winner of say stage 9 2 weeks in advance, but we're going to do it anyway because we're all about keeping you entertained. So getting into the individual stages for this first stretch up until stage 9, we'll start with stage 1. It's a team time trial, not all that long, 17.6 kilometers. You know, there's not a whole lot of really big team time trialing powerhouses here. I'm going to go with Orca Green Edge for this one. They've got a lot of the same guys that were with them in Romandy when they came very close to winning the team time trial stage. They're coming here too.
I am going to go with Etics Quickstep because basically I think their team is the mission this year is to win everything except the Cobble Classics. We've seen him win Amstel. We saw him at KBK, which is kind of a Cobble Classic. But they were second last year. They have a really strong team with a focus on GC. They are actually going to care about this because, you know, this kind of sets the tone for the race. If they can put Uran in the lead early, it gives them kind of the ability to control the race. They are going to want that position where they dictate what break gets away in one of the hillier early stages and takes the lead off their shoulders. I like them here.
All right, stage two looks to me like a pretty straightforward sprinter's day. I don't think Andre Greipel, as we said, is going to win every sprinter's day, but given that he's shown some good form in the last few days, I'll go with him as the winner of stage two.
Yeah, I'm also going to have to go with Greipel. I mean, I want to do something different with it, especially because it seems to finish in this little hilly, very typical Giro stage where you ride into a city and then finish with a hilly little circuit where, you know, there's all sorts of fun risks being taken by the local Italian guys. But yeah, I don't see any big shakeups this early in the event in terms of surprising wins from sprinters.
Yeah. Stage three, a bit more interesting in that there's some very difficult climbing on the day. Things start out in the beautiful seaside town of Rapallo, and they finish in the beautiful seaside town of Sestri Levante. So in between, though, there's a lot of climbing that goes on, and I don't think it's going to be a GC type of day. And there is a long flat section at the end, but I think it's going to drop some of the heavier sprinters, which means I like Michael Matthews on the day.
Yeah, I mean, not only is it hilly, but it's short. It's 136 kilometers, so you know there's not going to be a lot of holding back. You know, if you get spaced on these climbs, there's no regrouping. You know, you're basically cruising in with the laughing group. I think Matthews is a great pick. I'm actually going to go with Enrito Battaglin here. He's a guy who can get up climbs, who can finish well, and I think early in the race, a lot of bigger teams with longer term ambitions are not going to be willing to take the risks or to put the target on this day the way the smaller Italian squads will.
Stage four, another very bumpy day, and it's kind of up and down from start to finish. Not really sure what to expect here because there's no really hard single climb, but there's also not a lot of opportunities for the sprinters to have much of a break. I don't know if he's really fully back into shape yet, but I like Simon Gerrans in this stage just because the profile seems to really suit him. I guess it's just going to come down to whether he's fully healed after some early season injuries.
Yeah, you look at the profile and there's nothing bigger than a Cat 3 climb, but it's really even in between there, up and down, up and down. I think it's going to be a sprinter's day. I think, you know, you're going to lose some guys, but I still see, especially because the last 10K or so are downhill, I think I'm going to go with Greipel again for this one.
Stage five, maybe the first real GC day, probably not going to be too decisive, but things do finish at a summit. It's a Cat 2 summit. Not a super long day, pretty much just an early climb, a long descent, and then a long, but not all that steep, final climb. Because I don't expect it to be too hard, I think it could finish with a selective sprint. And I like Rigoberto Urán. I think he's one of the best, if not the best, sprinters among the GC contenders. So I like his chances of coming away with a stage win early in the race.
That is an interesting decision. I look at this and it reminds me a lot of, you know, it's a big climb, but it's not that big a climb, category two. You know, I'm going to say Blaine Matthews again, even though it was kind of a ridiculous day where he did win a sprint on top of a category two climb last year. And it was basically a gift from Cadel Evans. You know, he's a guy who really seems to have improved this year in terms of his ability to kind of suck it up and deal until that final kick. I think I'm going to go with Matthews here.
Stage six, there's a bit of a bumpy middle part of the stage, but that finish is really flat. Hard to see anything but a major bunch sprint coming to the line here. I I'm not really sure, again, that Greipel is going to be the guy for the sprints in this race, but I don't want to be too boring about it, but I have to pick him again for this stage just since he has shown form recently. Maybe things will be different by the time we get to this stage, but for the moment, I got to pick Greipel here.
Yep. I'm going to pick Giacomo Nizzolo, just, you know, as a gesture of support to you, Dane. I know he's a guy you really dig. This is not a super hard day. There's a little bit of hill to shake things up. Definitely going to be a sprint. And, you know, by the sixth day of the Grand Tour, people have really kind of fallen into their rhythm, worked the bugs out. I see him taking the victory here.
I've named Nizzolo as a guy to watch so many stages this year. If he wins one on the time you've named him and I haven't, I don't really know. Am I going to be excited or am I going to be really frustrated? I don't really know how I'm going to react there.
That's true. I have kind of ruined a potential win on stage six for you.
Yeah, you might have ruined it. Stage seven, very, very long. It's 264 kilometers. Not flat, but not as bumpy as some of the other stages we've hit so far. But things end on a bit of an uphill. I really like JJ Lobato's chances here. If they can reel in the breakaway on this day, I think this is going to be one of those Lobato versus Matthews stages. And the way Lobato has been climbing this year, I think he's got a great chance to come away with a win here.
Yeah, see, I'm looking at this and I'm seeing a Cat 1 summit finish on the next day's stage. I think nobody is going to want to chase the breakaway down here. I think people will be feeling the first week of racing. I think a breakaway takes this, no question. And I'm going to go with Adam Hansen because he is the guy who is going to see things that way and try and figure out a way to win.
As you pointed out, stage eight is a really difficult stage. There's a Cat 1 climb at the end of the day. It's going to be hard. It's a long, long way to the top of that first climb on the day, actually. So you'll think that these guys are going to come to the finishing climb with some tired legs. Because of the profile here and the long, slogging climbing, I really like Richie Porte. Maybe he's going to have that characteristic Richie Porte bad day later in the race, but this early on, I like his chances to come away with a win.
Yeah, I also see Porte kind of throwing the gauntlet down here. I don't see him making, you know, the race any kind of a gap. I don't see him making a gap that is in any way race winning or overall Giro winning here, but definitely going to send a signal to everyone else that, hey, I'm fit, I'm strong, and I'm going to put time into you on every climb. Let's see what you guys can do. So yeah, Porte for sure.
And then after that GC battle, we get stage nine. It's the Sunday stage, the last day before the first rest day. It's a very bumpy day. Not a really, really, really GC-oriented bumpy day, but there's a lot of climbs between start and finish. To me, this just screams breakaway. And because of that, I have to look at a Bardiani rider as a likely winner. Hard to pick one, but Stefano Perazzi, to me, looks like the kind of guy who could do well here. He finally took a stage win in last year's Giro after many years of knocking on the door. I think this is another good opportunity for Perazzi to pick up a big win here from a breakaway.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. I think, you know, 9 days of racing with no rest, there's not a lot of, this could potentially be a GC shakeup, but not in any realistic, predictable sense. I think everybody is kind of looking towards the rest day the next day, and they'll let 12 or 13 guys kind of sort out who's going to take it. I'm going to go with Diego Ulissi, I think. Guy just coming off a suspension, back at, Italian on an Italian team. It's a tough course, but it's not so tough that speed isn't going to be the determinant when it comes down to a sprint. So there's a late climb too, category two, and he can move uphill well enough. I'm just, throwing him out there because he seems like a guy who can take it.
So that's the first week plus 2 days of racing, and the first several days before we get to a rest day and a chance to record another show to maybe see where we stand at that point. It looks like we're calling for a forecast heavy on the Australians and the Italians, so keep an eye out for those kinds of guys. So now that we've gone through the overall parkour, we've named the overall contenders, we've taken a look at this first week and change, I think we can get in our first look at our overall predictions, which may change over the course of the race in the next two shows as we learn more and more. But this will be our opening salvo of our prognostications for who we think will be on the podium. I'll take the first crack at it. I really like Richie Porte's chances in this race. I think it's going to be a great battle between Contador and Porte. But since we have really yet to see Porte go through a full Grand Tour without a bad day, I have a hard time picking him as the top favorite here. Meanwhile, although Contador maybe hasn't had quite the run-up we would have expected from him, he's also been right there pretty much on every mountain stage he's raced this year. He may not have won any big World Tour events so far, but he's typically been right with the lead groups on the mountaintop finishes where maybe one guy has gotten up the road. And I think in the Giro, where he's going to be motivated to go for the victory, he's going to be that one guy trying to get up the road. So I'll take the kind of the safe pick here and go with Contador as the winner, but I'm looking forward to seeing whether Porte really can stick up there with him, because his form would suggest maybe that he really can this year. And then I'll put Rigoberto Urán in third, which I'm sure would be frustrating for him, but maybe it's better than coming in second 3 years in a row.
I'm going to pick Contador. I think he is, you know, his recent record notwithstanding, I think, well, I shouldn't say won the previous Grand Tour, but Contador is really the best Grand Tour rider of this generation. Doping and other things, you know, notwithstanding, you know, he's a guy who really has shown an ability, even when he is not on form, to really stick in the GC, to really make things happen, and to overcome bad days, to avoid bad days, to minimize bad days. I think he's too hard to beat. I think Porte, while on fire this year, will inevitably collapse, and I have Urán in second again. I'll just put Porte in third to save me the trouble of looking through the start list for a dark horse third place finisher.
All right. That's our predictions as of the starting gun. Things could change dramatically after the first week, and we may change our predictions in the next show. It'll be a dynamic, a fluid thing. And just a quick note on predictions, we're not going to prognosticate on the points jersey or the mountains jersey, but we will be keeping a close eye on what's going on in those classifications as the race continues. So we'll be certain to talk about that a bit more in the next two shows. To close things out, I'll just say hooray for Alberto Contador for riding in this race. Nobody's made a serious attempt at the Giro Tour double in a long time. While I am a little skeptical of his chances, especially of taking on the Tour after riding in the Giro, bravo to him for spicing up the race and bringing the kind of legitimacy of the, as you said, the greatest Grand Tour rider of his generation riding in the Giro and the Tour de France in a couple of months.
Yeah, and, you know, on that note, I've kind of become convinced over the past few years that the Grand Tours at 3 weeks are kind of counterproductively long. Michele Acquarone, who was formerly the Giro director, shared this opinion and actually did a lot of work. I mean, not intentionally, but a lot of the stuff he wrote about it and said about it really kind of convinced me. I mean, we're psyched because there's one guy who could contend for the Tour de France on the start list. And at 2 weeks long, we could have 10 guys. So I am all for trying to shorten something. Just experiment and see what happens, you know, get the top guys together, racing together more often.
You know, I'm on board with that too, I have to say. Well, we hope you enjoy the race. We'll see you next time. This has been part one of the Recon Rides Giro d'Italia pre-race analysis shows. I'm Dane Cash.
And I am Cosmo Catalano.
And that's our show.